So of James, please. Chapter 1. James, chapter 1. We'll read, please, first of all, from verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience, but that patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. Verse 7, for let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perisheth. So shall also the rich man fade away in his ways. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. But let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Trust that God will bless with his word. If we do have time, we may turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 as well. The last couple of subjects we've had today have been based on particular words. I want us to look at the subject of temptation. When we think of the word temptation, normally speaking, we have a sort of a negative connotation of it. We think of temptation to do evil. But the word, as it's used in our King James, does not necessarily have that connotation. There can be temptation to do good as well as temptation to do evil. For example, in Genesis chapter 22, now after these things, the Lord did tempt Abraham. Certainly, God never tempted Abraham to do evil. God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. So, the word temptation in itself doesn't necessarily have that sort of connotation. I want you to notice, first of all, in verse 2, it says, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations. It does not say when you fall in divers temptations. It's not a spiritual or a moral fall that is in view in verse 2, whatever. I take it that what it has in mind is circumstances in which you find yourself over which you had no control. You fell into divers temptations. You don't fall by choice. It's something that happens to you. It's not something that you do yourself. Then I want you to notice the word temptation. It's a compound word, the original Greek word. And it comes from a verb that means to pierce. So what is stressed in relation to the word temptation is the character of the experience. It's a painful experience that it's speaking of. It speaks about the trials that you and I go through in our lives. Now, I don't suppose anyone here has ever been through any trials in life, have you? life has always been so very nice and easy. Well, life is not like that. When our children were small, I used to tell them the world's shortest story. And it went like this. Once upon a time, they all lived happily ever after. That was the length of the story. And sometimes we as Christians think that that's the way life should be. That once you're saved, everything should be like a garden of roses. I remember, many, many years ago when I was a very young Christian, Ben Sutton came to the assembly where I was in Wales and had gospel meetings, and I got my father to come out, and my father professed during those meetings. He didn't get saved at that time, but he did make a profession. And I can remember at the end of this meeting, this older brother saying to my dad, "Now everything will go well in your business." That didn't sit well with me at all, because there's no guarantee of that. Life is not a bed of roses. Man is born unto trouble as the sparks fly upward. You ever sat by a bonfire and just watched the sparks go up? It's just natural. So it is in life. Man is born unto trouble as the sparks go upward. Now, I guess there could be some here and you've never really had too much difficulty in your life up until now. Well, hang in there. Don't get impatient. It'll come. Just live long enough, that's all. There will be trials in your life. I want us to think, first of all, then, about the productivity of trials. He says, my brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into divers temptations. It's not something we would naturally do, is it, when we go through trials in life? We don't normally rejoice over it. Well, it is something that should bring joy into our lives, to fall into diverse trials. Verse 3 is why they should do it. He says, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. That word trying, that word literally means the proving. Sometimes the stress is on the process. Sometimes the stress is on the end result. Sometimes, of course, the stress covers both. You'll notice here, for knowing this, that the proving of your faith worketh patience. Again, that word patience doesn't mean patience as we have it today. It means endurance. It's the quality of endurance. The nearest thing in our Bibles to our word patience today is the word long-suffering. And long-suffering in the New Testament is in relation to people. You're long-suffering towards people. But this word patience or endurance is in relation to trials, circumstances in life. So he says that we should count it all joy when we fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the proving of your test, the process of your proving of your faith, the process through which you go, works that quality of endurance. And if you and I want to have that quality to be able to endure, we have to know what it is to go through trials in life. After all, if you've never been through trouble in your life, how can you know whether you have the quality of endurance or not? You've never had to endure. It's the same with plants. They have to go through certain hardships in order to build strength into the plant. I'm not a horticulturalist by any stretch of the imagination, but I do know that much. It builds strength into the plant. And so, with you and me, as we go through various trials, it does produce results. So here we have then present results. We have here an ongoing experience. The verb to work is in the present tense. It speaks of something that is continuous. It worketh. It's not something that is just suddenly there. It's something that is produced over a period of time. And in order for it to work, that the trial has to be over a period of time. And so every one of us is going to experience trials in their life. Verse 4. Here we have how long they should be prepared to go through trials. But let endurance have her perfect or complete work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. Let endurance have her complete work. What does that mean? It means don't try and find a way out of the trial. Don't try to avoid it. Just let it work its course through your life. And as you allow it to work its course through your life, it will produce the results that you desire to see. When I think of trials in a person's life, the person that comes most to me is Joseph. You think of all that Joseph had to go through in his life. He was envied by his brethren. He was sold by them into the hands of the Ishmaelites. Taken down into Egypt, where he was sold to Potiphar as a slave. He was, or at least Potiphar's wife, tried to seduce him. And in order to preserve his character, he was prepared to lose his reputation. And so he fled from the home, and she held his garment in her hand. And so he was accused of having tried to seduce her, and he ended up in prison. Think of all these trials that came into Joseph's life. Do you know what we read? Well, when he was in Potiphar's house, we read that Potiphar saw that the Lord was with him. When he was in prison, it says, now the Lord was with Joseph. You'd never have known it by the circumstances in which he found himself that the Lord was with him. It wasn't an obvious thing. But the Lord was with him. And then we find he interpreted the dreams of the chief butler and the chief baker. Remember, he said to the chief butler, remember me when it is well with thee. But the butler forgot. And Joseph continued another 2 years in prison. But at the end of those 2 years, when Pharaoh had his dreams, Joseph was there. Joseph was available to interpret the dreams of Pharaoh. And we all know the end result. Joseph became lord over all the land of Egypt. People had to bow the knee before him. And he became the savior of the world of that day and the savior of his own family. Do you remember what he said to his brethren? He said, ye meant it unto evil, but God meant it unto good. You know, we don't read of one single thing against Joseph. Now, I'm not saying for 1 minute that Joseph was perfect. He wasn't. There obviously would have been sins in Joseph's life. But there's not a record of any sin in Joseph's life. Joseph developed into a beautiful character. Why? Because of the proving of his faith. You see? Joseph had to go through all that to make him the man that he became. So don't you ever get the idea that now that you're a Christian, everything should go well. You know, it amazes me that some Christians, when some deep, dark valley experience comes into their lives, they think everything's gone wrong. Where's God in all this? But God was there. Think of Psalm 23.
I want you to notice that in the first three verses, the psalmist is about the Lord. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures, and so on. In the first three verses, he's speaking about the Lord. But when you come to verse 4, he says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for he is with me. No, it doesn't say that. For thou art with me. It's when we go through the valley experiences, and that verse has nothing to do with dying, by the way. We may make that an application, the valley of the shadow of death. It's not the valley of death, it's the valley of the shadow of death. But remember this, will you? Wherever there's a shadow, there must be a light to cause the shadow. And so he says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Notice the word through. Not into the valley of the shadow of death, but through the valley of the shadow of death. I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. If you're in the valley now, remember this. You're going through. Amongst my favorite verses is the first two verses of Isaiah chapter 43. When thou passest through the rivers, I will be with thee. And through the waters, they shall not overflow thee. Isn't that wonderful? Again, underline that word through. When thou passest through the rivers, God says, I will be with thee. And through the waters, they shall not overflow thee. Think again of the experience of the disciples. Remember, the Lord had said to the disciples, let us pass over unto the other side. Now listen. When the Lord says, let's go to the other side, we can be sure we're going to get there. Okay? So they got into the boat on the Sea of Galilee, and they're in the midst of the sea, and there's this gigantic storm at sea that Ross mentioned to us earlier. Was it Ross? No, it was Stanley. Mentioned about the storm at sea. He didn't tell us why he thought Satan was behind it. I'm sure the reason was this. The Lord rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace be still. Satan was behind the storm. Do you remember where the Lord was? The Lord was asleep in the hinder part of the ship. He experienced perfect rest in the midst of the storm. Why? Because he knew he was going to get to the other side. He had perfect confidence in his Father. And the disciples come to him and they wake him and say, Lord, carest thou not that we perish? They weren't going to perish. No one could perish while the Lord was in the ship. Listen. He promised them a safe arrival. He didn't promise them a comfortable journey. Okay? So life is not all a bed of roses. And there will be trials in your life, sometimes very deep trials. But it's when we're in those trials that we can sense the presence of the Lord in a very special way. Think again of Daniel's companions. Remember the fiery furnace? Do you recall that they had perfect confidence in God that he could deliver them from this trial? But they said, if not, in other words, they were quite prepared to go through the trial if God was not willing to deliver them. He said, if not, we will not bow down to thee. And so the fire was heaped up until it became seven times more than it was wont to be heated. And here are these three men in the fire. Was it three? No, it wasn't three. There were four men in the fire. And the one was like unto the Son of God. No, he wasn't. He was the Son of God. And there in the midst of that severe trial, and I'm convinced of this, those men, before they actually went into the fire, they were terrified. Oh yes, they had confidence in God that He could deliver them, but they didn't at that time have any word from God that He would deliver them, so they were prepared to be consumed in the fire if necessary. They were terrified. But listen, they had an experience in the fire they never could have had without it. There was one like unto the Son of God with them in the fire. And I'm convinced of this. If you and I could have been there, when they came out of the fire, and we went up to them and said to them, tell me, where would you rather be, here or back in the fire? I'm pretty sure they would have said back in the fire. Because they had an experience there they couldn't have without it. They had the sense of the presence of the Son of God. Okay, so how long are we supposed to be prepared to endure the trial? For as long as it takes in order to produce the desired results. Now what are the desired results here? He says that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. That word perfect has the idea of maturity. So I've put for that full development. Then the next word, entire. That is balanced. No part underdeveloped. Thirdly, wanting nothing. No part missing. So that's the goal of the trials of life that you and I pass through, that we might be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. Okay, now verses 5 to 8. Here we have the prayer of faith. If any of you lack wisdom, now don't take these verses out of their context. He hasn't changed his subject because he's going to go on to speak about trials a little lower down. So he's still speaking about trials. If any of you lack wisdom, I take it this is not the wisdom of a Solomon. This is not the idea of having understanding of all things. This is wisdom in the circumstance. What should I do when I'm passing through a certain set of circumstances? Should I seek to change those circumstances, if possible? Or should I be prepared to let those circumstances persist? We don't always know what the answer is. So he says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. So, what should we pray for? We should pray for wisdom in relation to the trial. How does God give that wisdom? That giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not. That is, he reproacheth not. God's not going to tell us off because we don't know. He gives us the wisdom to know how we should respond. That is, if we're prepared to go through with it, if we really desire God's best for us, God will give us the wisdom to know what to do in the situation. If, on the other hand, we have already predetermined what we want, God's not going to give us the wisdom. I used to know a brother who used to publicly pray that God would give him a wife. But I remember hearing the story of someone, and he prayed that God would give him a wife, but he said, let it be Mary. In other words, he had already predetermined who the wife was going to be. Well, you know, if we pray that way in relation to our trials, we already have made up our minds that we're going to get out of this trial, then God's not going to give us the wisdom. After all, we think we already have it. So if we think we already have it, God's not going to give it to us. Verse 6. But let him ask in faith,
nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. So when we ask God to give us wisdom, we should pray believing that he's going to do so. I wonder if you and I really pray that way. Most of us are familiar, somewhat at least, of the story of George Mueller. I've seen one of the buildings, from the outside at least, that George Mueller had his orphans in, a huge building. I understand there were five of these huge buildings back in the 19th century. George Mueller cared for hundreds and hundreds of children, never asked another human being for anything, never told another human being about the need of the work. He didn't send prayer letters around mentioning what they needed. Did nothing like that. He just took it all to God, and God supplied the need. But I understand that he kept a record of his prayers. When he prayed, what he prayed for, and in a third column, when God answered that prayer. Now I think most of us would have left the third column off just in case God didn't answer our prayer. But he expected God to answer his prayer. And because he expected God to answer his prayer, God most certainly did. Now come down with me, please, to verse 12. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord shall have promised to them that love him. Here we have the blessing of temptation endured. Now notice the verb endured is in the present tense, and the present tense in the Greek always speaks of something continuous. So this is not temptation that has come to an end now. This is a temptation or a trial that you're already in and you're continuing in. So he says, blessed or happy is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life. Now you'll notice, please, that we have here the verb form of the word trial, which we mentioned earlier. When he is proved, he shall receive the crown of life. This verse is speaking about the end of the trial, after it's all behind, it's history. So he says, blessed is the man that endureth, continues under. The word to endure means to remain under. Blessed is the man that remains under temptation. For when he is tried, that is, when the trial has come to a conclusion, and he has been proved and approved, he shall receive the crown of life which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. So there is going to come an end to the trial, and there is a prize for those who endure the trial. Now verse 13, please. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. Now there's a slight change now in the theme. Now he's not going to be speaking about trials in general. He's speaking about temptation to do evil. So he says, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. Now remember we read, God did tempt Abraham, but he didn't tempt Abraham to do ill. He tested Abraham's faith to see if his confidence was in God. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. You'll notice the addition of those words, with evil. So now he has qualified the temptation. This is temptation to do evil. So no man is to say that God led me into this temptation. If you find yourself being tempted to do something that is wrong and you fall in that temptation, don't put the blame on God, because God cannot be tempted with evil, neither does He tempt anyone. So God is not the source of that temptation. Verse 14. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Now we must understand this. There are two kinds of temptation. There is temptation from without, and there is temptation from within. And that's what he's talking about now here in verse 14, is temptation from within, from the very nature that you and I inherited from Adam. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Now in these verses, the writer is using the figure of the strange woman that we read of often in the book of Proverbs. In fact, as you go through James's epistle, he draws largely from two resources. He draws very largely from the book of the Proverbs, on the one hand, and he draws from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, on the other hand. And so here he's drawing on the figure of the strange woman, the harlot in the book of Proverbs. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust. So first of all, we have the seducer. And what is the seducer here? It's his own lusts. That's the seducer. So if you and I fall into temptation, if you find ourselves falling into some kind of moral sin, God is not the root of it. God has not introduced that into your life. That has come from within yourself, from the nature that you inherited from Adam. So we have then the seducer. Secondly, we've got the conception. Verse 15. Then when lust hath conceived. So we've got the conception. Thirdly, we've got the birth. It bringeth forth sin. Sin is the end result when we allow ourselves to be tempted from within. Fourthly, we've got the child born. Sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. And I cannot help but think of Cain. Remember, Cain was the first man that was born after Adam and Eve had both sinned against God. And Cain was a murderer. And so there we have the picture. Now come with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, please. Verse 13. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape, that ye may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my dear beloved, flee from idolatry. The first thing I want us to notice in relation to this verse is that their trials were not unique to themselves. Again, don't introduce into this verse necessarily the idea of temptation to do evil. If any man is tested, there hath no temptation, no trial taken you, but such as is human, such as is common to man. Don't you ever run away with the idea that nobody has ever been through what you're going through. Many have gone through similar trials to any trial that you might be going through. And many of those who have gone through those trials have come through those trials successfully. So don't you ever think that no one's ever had to suffer like you've had to suffer. That's the first thing I want us to notice. Secondly, I want you to notice they weren't left to bear it alone. There hath no trial taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful. They weren't left to bear it alone. God has promised his presence with us through whatever trial we may be called to go through. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. God has promised his presence with us in whatever trials we may be called to go through. Thirdly, I want you to notice that their trials were not insurmountable. Their trials were not insurmountable. God is faithful, who will not suffer, will not allow you to be tempted, tested, above that which you are able. No trial is insurmountable. You will never be called upon to go through any trial in your life that you could not possibly know the victory over. That's what it's saying. Why? Because God measures the trials. God knows what we can take. I've often here in Kamloops referred to Genesis 22 when God tempted Abraham. Notice it says in Genesis 22, after these things, the Lord did tempt Abraham. It wasn't before these things. It was after these things. What things? Well, all the various circumstances that Abraham had experienced in his life ever since God had called him out of Ur of the Chaldees. God was preparing him for this supreme test in his life. He didn't give him the test before he was ready for it. He gave him the test when he was ready for it. So if you're going through some severe trial, you should, in a sense, take it as a compliment because God knows you're ready for the trial. Okay. So no trial is insurmountable. Fourthly, God provides a way through the trial. He says, God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tested above that ye are able, but will with the trial also make a way of escape, not from it, but through it, that ye may be able to bear it. So when God brings some severe trial into your life, and likely most of us will go through severe trials at some time in life, remember this, God will be with you in the trial. He will not allow that trial to be more than you could possibly bear. And he has promised that he will make a way of escape through that trial in order that you may be able to bear it. Now that poses a problem, doesn't it? I'm sure all of us know of Christians who have gone through trials in their life and they have not found those trials insurmountable. They failed in those trials. I would suggest sometimes the person probably wasn't even saved in the first place. But on the other hand, there are believers that do fail miserably in their trials, and I'm sure every one of us at some time or other has failed in the trial that we've been going through. What's wrong? Is it because God is not able to fulfill his word? Is his promise not reliable? Of course not. The failure's not in God. The failure's in ourselves. That's why I read verse 14. Verse 14, he says, wherefore, my dear beloved, for this reason, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. You see, what's idolatry got to do with us? We don't know anything of idolatry. We don't bow down to images of wood and stone. And I'm not even going to make the application of anything that comes between us and God. I'm not going to do that. Well, idolatry was the particular problem that the Corinthians were faced with. They were born into idolatry. It was part and parcel of life in Corinth. There were idols on every street corner. It was a constant problem to them. You know, if you and I lived in Zambia or some other part of Africa, we would understand this more clearly. Because the Christians, they were brought up in idolatrous worship, the worship of animals and all sorts, and you know all the sort of thing that goes on there. And it's always a problem the Christians are faced with. Maybe some sickness comes into their life and some of their unsaved relatives are trying to get the witch doctor to come along to cast out the demon. That's the problem that they were faced with. And it was something they could always fall back into. Your problem and mine may be somewhat different. You know, we all have strong points in our temperaments and weak points. And when it comes to our weaknesses, we need to be aware of them. And we need to avoid them. Think of Samson. Samson was a man who was physically strong, but he was morally weak. Samson was a Nazarite. And as a Nazarite, he wasn't supposed to eat anything of the vine from the grape to the kernel. He wasn't supposed to eat any of it. And he wasn't supposed to touch a dead bone. But where do we find Samson? He's passing through a vineyard. He got as close to it as he possibly could. And when he's passing through the vineyard, he sees the carcass of a lion. And lo and behold, out from the carcass of the lion come these bees. So he knows that in the carcass of the lion, there's a beehive. And he loves honey. So I can just imagine him. He's not supposed to touch a bone. But very carefully, he puts his hands around the ribs and takes some of the honey out of the beehive. He got as close to sin as he possibly could. That's why he had a fall. So God has given us a promise that if we're going to go through any trial in life, he will make sure that that trial is not insurmountable, that he can give us the victory over that trial. But if we're going to know the victory of that over that trial, then flee from whatever might be a problem in your life. Stay as far away from temptations that you cannot overcome. And he will give us the victory. So there we have something of the teaching of the scriptures in relation to trials in a Christian's life. We're all going to pass that way at some time or other. We can know the victory as long as we're trusting God and seeking to do His will. Thank you.